Today is the 10th of Av. We are on Perek Dalet, Pasuk Zayin. So we got to the point last time when they had made the decision, the Ploni Almoni, whoever he is not going to do the Geula, such as it is. He's not going to go forward. It's up to Boaz. So now the Megillah is going to tell us the nature of the way that transactions were done at that time. And we have an interesting expression there. And it says, Vizos lifanim bi Yisrael, al ha-gula v'al ha-tumura. This is what they used to do, al ha-gula v'al ha-tumura. What is the difference? What would we usually expect to see for the word that would tell us a custom or a tradition or a way that things were done for years? It would say often vizos milifnim miYisrael. Here it says lifnim. It's not lifanim, not milifnim. And this seems to tell us that it is something that used to be done, but is no longer being done. That it was something that was ended. Let's put it that way, because we learned the Malbim tells us an interesting procedure. We're looking here to what is the way which we symbolically had a transaction. You know, for example, when you acquire land, you can't physically pick up land. If I sell you this book, right? You give me the money, I give you the book. You cut into the book, you pick it up, you take a hold of it. With any metallic objects, that's very easy to understand. But how do you convey land? In the Gentile law, Neil, you probably remember this, in England, they used to have what was called livery of seizin. They would actually take a branch and break a branch off a tree and hand it to you. It's okay, this is symbolic. I can't put my arms around the land. Here, we have an idea where there would be some act which would show that there was a transfer of property. The Midrash tells us, according to the Malbim, that that originally, in the what they call the olden times, they would have a transaction involving the removal of a shoe, the removing of a sandal. And we'll see how they did that in just a minute. And he says, but chazrulios konim biktsotza. They used to develop a ceremony in which mahu dingtsotza, Rabbi Yosef bar Avin, the Gemara tells us, Kol mi shemocher sadehu, hayukroiv meviv chavis malea klayos egoizim. They would bring a big jug or a big container that had parched nuts in it and had corn or whatever. Mushabri mifnei atinokos, then they would smack it, break it, and all the children, atinokos malaktim v'oimrim, niktsas ploni ma'achuzosei. Such and such has now been cut off from his property. In other words, we broke this, there's a, I forget what it's called, there's a Spanish, what's that called, where they, yes, piñata, right. They smack this, they put a blindfold and they smack this thing. Well, so was the case there. When a person sold his land, he would hit this thing, break it, and all the children would pick up the treats that were in it and yell, oh, such and such a person is cut off from his achuzah. The Gemara tells us, though, there was yet another custom that if a person were to marry someone who wasn't quite appropriate for their family, the relatives would set up this item and they would come and smash it and they would all begin to yell, such and such a person is now cut off from his family because he's married an Isha Lokshera. So this pinata-like item really seemed to be have a certain tradition in how it was used in bringing about the symbolic, at least, transfer of land or the transfer, in that case, of the person marrying someone.
Rashi, it's not clear who was passing the shoe to whom.
Right, yes, absolutely. Now, when we get that, it's just a second, the end of the pasuk. So, Vizos lefanim Yisrael, this was the custom. Al ha-ge'ula v'al ha-temura. Ge'ula, Rashi says, is a transaction of sale, and temura is an exchange. Chalipin. So whether it was mechira or chalipin, l'kayim kol dovar, to give effect to an item, to an event, what would happen? Shalaf ish na'alo v'nosan l'reyehu. The person would take off his shoe or undo his sandal, and he would give it one to the other. Rashi says, Zehu kinyan kamo sha'anu konim besudar b'mokom na'al. Today, we have a kinyan sudar. When you see it at a wedding, when you see it even when you sell your chametz, any kind of transaction, they take an item, maybe we'll take a yarmulke, they'll take a handkerchief, they'll take a shmata, something, and raise it up. You take hold of this, and by this do you symbolize that you acknowledge that you are making this transaction. What Rashi says, as you just pointed out, shalaf ish na'aloi, a person that would take off his shoe, what exactly happened here? Rabbi Hussein Uzal nechleku badover. Mi nosan lemi. Who's giving the shoe to who? Am I giving it to you as the seller? Am I symbolizing that with this shoe that I'm giving you, I am selling this property? Or is it the buyer giving it to the seller? Yeah, there's going to be money changing hands, but symbolically, at least, I'm giving you something now. Yeshomrim konim b'kelev shalkoina. Some say we use it's the buyer's item, which would mean there, Boaz nosan legoel. What was happening? The goel had certain rights. We'll talk in a minute about what those rights were. Boaz, the goel, whoever was doing the redeeming, had certain rights. For the reasons we talked about before, he was afraid it would affect his family and so forth. He didn't want to do it. So he was conveying those rights to who? To Boaz. So, is it the Boaz Nasan Lagoil? If it's the buyer giving it to the seller, it would be Boaz here giving it to the Goel. V'yesha, my mother say no, as you can imagine. It's the opposite. Kainim b'kelev shel makne. It's the seller's item that's being used in this exchange, in this transfer here. And in that case, Goel Nasan LaBoaz. And the Goel will be giving it to Boaz. And he said, V'zos hatu, the Pasuk says, V'zos hatu udah. Be Israel. This was what's Teudah? Miloshan Edus. This is the symbol. This is testimony. Mishpat HaEdus, says Rashi. The witnesses who witnessed this transaction could later come and say, you know, the transaction falls apart. As all the law that we learn about these kinds of things generally come from, as you know, from cases that went bad. And all the case law and all the things that we learn about what happens from cases that didn't work, not from ones that did. Okay, so let's say it fell apart. What could the witnesses say? Do they know how much money was involved? Not necessarily. Do they know the specific terms? No, not necessarily. But what did they see? Because they saw the transfer of the shoe. They saw the act which was the act of kinyan. How is a woman mikudeshes? In our custom in our day, the ring is placed on her finger. We bring two edim to stand there, designated, come, stand here, watch, and watch the physical transfer and the placing of the ring on the finger. So that's zosat teudah b'Yisrael. This was the way it was done as an old custom. Of course, then later became the pseudo-pinata event. And this is the way it was done. Okay, what was the way it was done? What is the way? What would happen? A person would, as it says, a kayan called dover, shalaf ish na'alo. The person would take off his shoe. Now, Ibn Ezra says a question about why it would be the shoe. He said, he talks about it in Pasuk Ches, but he says, why this shoe? Hatam nal, why shoe? Why not your jacket? Why not your hat? Bavur shu nimsa tomid. You always have shoes on. V'lo yitachein lahasir choluk o michnasayim. Can't take off his pants. He can't take off his shirt. Why, says the Ibn Ezra? Shelo yishar arum. He wouldn't be, he can't be naked. He could take off his pants in front of everybody. He said, so an item that you have on at all times is your shoe or your sandal. And that's what would happen. We learned once before that the ceremony by which a person who is required Torahitically to do Yibum, which is not our case here, but is Torahitically required to Yibum, who wants to be absolved of the responsibility, goes through a ceremony which we call Chalitza. What is Chalitza? That is the removal of, that word itself, is the removal of the sandal, the undoing, the unstrapping of the sandal of the shoe. We said before, what's the connection between that and this whole idea of the deceased brother? And perhaps you remember we said that the shoe, symbolically, is the place where the person can be present in this world. To step on land, you need a shoe. And the shoe becomes very important. We actually saw an example of that yesterday, right? In the Birchos HaShachar, some have the custom, and many have the custom, that in Birchos HaShachar and Tisha B'Av, we don't say the bracha, She'asali kol tzarkei. Blessed is God who takes care of all my needs. Because that is the bracha that goes along with putting on your shoe. And we don't wear leather shoes on Tisha B'Av. So we said that the deceased person hovers and looks for a place in this world. Wants to stand on this world. He's deceased. The deceased brother is survived by the one who's the miyabim, who's going to do yibum, right? He is going to be the decedent's place in this world. And we have in English that same expression, I don't know if it comes from this, but it occurred to me, I'm going to stand in your shoes. I'm going to stand in someone else's shoes. We have that expression, don't judge someone until you stand in his shoes. You're in his place. So the surviving brother is going to do yibum. He's going to stand in his shoes. But the guy who's doing chalitza isn't giving him that chance. Right? He's saying, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to be miyabim. I'm not going to carry on your name. For whatever reason, I'm not going to marry your widow and I'm not going to take over or what have you. So I'm going to do chalitza. And when he does chalitza, he's taking away the shoe from the prior brother. Not literally, but he's taking away the opportunity to, if you will, stand in his shoes.
He's not a stand-in anymore,
right? He's not going to stand in his shoes. So now the neshama of the other person is not grounded, has no place to be grounded in this world. The now, because of social norms, etc., and I say now, I mean for many hundreds of years, chalitza isn't, I mean, yibum isn't done, and except the rare certain cases, which was not done. Sure. They spit. He's a base chalutzah. No, it's not a. So I was going to say, until the last couple hundred years, whenever, when we forced people to do chalutzah, it was not seen as a positive thing because you're doing, you're not giving the deceased his place in this world. Okay, so that was one of the things we said, but I saw today from the Shulah a very interesting issue on why the shoe. What's the connection to the shoe? There are four elements in the world going from higher to lower. There's the domem, tzomeach, chai, umedaber. The domem is dirt, rock. It doesn't move on its own. It doesn't speak. It has no life force as we know life forces, although we know that there was a life force even in the domem, but it doesn't have the life force like a person does or an animal does. Next above it is the tzomeach. Each one of the four levels is superior to the one immediately below it. So for example, the tzomeach controls the domem. How so? Because the tzomeach is planted in the domem and takes its nourishment from the domem. It's taking minerals, nutrients, whatever comes out of the soil. The chai, which is the animal, has control of the tzomeach. How do we know that? Because he eats it. Right? The tzomeach is plants, vegetables. We draw the nutrition from the domim. They control the domim. And now comes the chai and does what? Eats the tzomeach. So when he eats the tzomeach, he controls not only the tzomeach, but also the domim, right? Indirectly, he's getting those nutrients that the tzomeach took out of the domim. Now comes the person. What's the person do? He kills the chai, he kills the living thing, the cow, and eats the cow. And in so doing, he is getting the benefit of not only the cow, the tzomeach, and the domim. So the person is in charge of everything. Person in charge of everything. Now, why the shoe? When the person kills an animal and the hide is being used for leather, there's another example of how the person, the medaber, controls all the elements. Because he killed the animal, and from the animal, he took that leather. Now that animal ate the tzomeach, which drew its nourishment from the domain. It's like chadgadja, right? In Pesach, all the different levels. But that's what happens here. So the leather, and therefore what we call a shoe or a sandal, represents the fact that the person is in control. I control it all. Ah, but you don't control it all, I guess, in this case. Why? Because here, what's happening? He takes off his shoe. You don't have control. You aren't completely in control. You are giving up some of your rights. Right? He took off his shoe. So his rights, his control, is passed to Boaz. You acquire it. I'm not going to go forward with this. Let's do this ceremony. Let's do what we have to do. You're going to take over. And he takes off his shoe. Why, as an additional question, why do we have the custom that in certain holy places we take off our shoes? Like, how did you, in Beis HaMikdash, you didn't go with shoes? Why do we, if in Duchen, take off our shoes? Because in a place where there's the revelation of the Shekhinah, where the presence of God is more manifest or is more directed, we are not in charge. Right? Wearing shoes, you're in charge. Right? You're wearing the shoes which came from the chai, which ate the tzomeach, which drew from the domim. You're in charge of everything. You're not in charge in the makom kodesh. It's he writes here, Eino habalabayis halakol, v'ein hakol tachas litosei. When you stand on a shoe, I mean, your foot is in the shoe, and your shoe is standing on the ground, everything beneath you, you're in charge. You're in charge of everything. Not in the holy places. You're not in charge there. And therefore, the symbol of being in charge is removed. And that's what happens here. We're removing that aspect of being in charge. You're giving up something. Here he's giving up the rights. The seller is giving up the rights.
Why we are not allowed to wear a sandal on a shoe on the Har Habayis.
Right.
And with Kohanim and the Midavoda, not allowed to have a chesitza between your feet and the floor.
Because the thing, if you were wearing a shoe, it would show that you're in charge. Okay, so now what happens? Vayomer Boaz came, the shoe, we don't know, right? We have a machlokas, and we're not going to resolve that here today, or we can't probably resolve it. Either he gave him a shoe, or he gave him a shoe, but Vayomer Boaz lazakenim the cholom. And he says to everybody who's there, and I want to look at these two psukim together. Vayomer Boaz lazakenim the cholom. Edim atem hayom. You are the edim. You are watching this transaction, and what are you seeing? The shoe transfer. You are seeing what we say is the symbolic way that we transfer items. Ki kanisi es kol asher le'eli melech, V'yeis kol asher l'chilyon u'machlon miyad na'ami. V'gam esrus ha'mo'avio eishes machlon kanisi li. L'isho l'hokim shem ha'meis ha'nachlosoi. V'lo yukarei shem ha'meis mi'mechov v'mishar makomo. Edim atem hayom. First thing you see is, he says twice, Edim atem hayom. Today you are witnesses. Why was it necessary to say that twice? And in the second pasuk, the first pasuk says Kanisi, and the second pasuk he says Kanisi Li. Why do we need to aid him twice? Great. Two separate transactions. I am designating you. You are the witnesses for my acquisition. Well, just for a shorthand, we'll say of the property. Of the property. And I'm also designating you as witnesses for my betrothal, my marrying Rus. What's the hint to that in the second pasuk? In the first pasuk it says, ki konisi. And in the second pasuk it says, konisi li. As in, under the chuppah, hariat mekudeshes, li. And we've all heard all the crazy stories and jokes about the chassan who's so nervous and he can't remember what to say. So the rabbi says, repeat after me. Hooray, hooray, at, b'kudeshes. Then the rabbi can't say li, because he doesn't want to be betrothing the woman. So he says, now say li. So the guy says, now say li. He says, no, not now say, you say li. And he says, you say li. It's almost like, who's on first? But in any case, the li in the second pasuk, konisi li, be witnesses that I am mekadesh to me, rus, li isha. Lohakim shem ha'meis ha'nach losei. To keep the name of the deceased going on, and that his name should not be cut off. Now remember again, there is no din of Yibum Midaraisa here, right? He's not a brother. He's not the brother of the deceased husband. He's not anything. He's a relative. He is the Goel that the Pasuk would tell us about, but even that isn't clear, because when does the Geula come in? Redeeming the fields comes in after the relative sold it, and you're going to redeem it from a third party. Here, Naomi hasn't sold it yet. We remember before, Rashi told us that Ruth had said, my mother-in-law and I are going to be selling our property, and if you want to buy it, you're also going to have to take me. And then later, it says, the field Asher Kanisi Naomi, which I bought from Naomi. So she hadn't sold it. So all this is really, not the din, but according to the Ramban, the minhag. The minhag in the way we conducted ourselves to make sure that everything goes according to proper way. Why are we so worried? Why were Rus and Naomi so worried about these minhagim? Because if you look at these two minhagim here, you'll see it's actually the mirror image of what got them into trouble in the first place. What happened to Machlon? Machlon's actions in not conducting himself according to custom and usage of staying with the land when the people were poor, etc., and fleeing, got him into trouble. It ultimately resulted in his punishment, which killed him. So now we're going to return the land. It's going to stay in the family. We're going to make sure that we're not going to run away from it. It's going to stay in the family. What was the other thing that Machlon did wrong? He married a woman who, at the very least, had not properly converted. Now, he's going to be Mekadesh, this woman, who everyone sees as a very big tzedekis, and everything was good about her, and she's properly converted. So he's kind of going to undo the bad things. And in so doing, he, Boaz, here, together with Rus, is restoring the place that the Elimelech family, the Machlon and the Chilion offspring, had before this all happened. So he's undoing which was done in these two psukim by acquiring her and acquiring the field. Now, there's one other little tidbit in this pasuk which seems to be different than every time else we've seen this. Until now, wherever we saw Machlon and Chilion referred to, it says Machlon and Chilion. What does it say here? Es Ashkol Ashel Chilion and Machlon. Why is Chilion coming first. It's the first time we see it. Why does it happen like this? Who died first? Rachla, right? The pasuk says, "Vayamusu gam shnehem machlon v'chilyon." The pshat in that pasuk is that Machlon died first. So, what happened when Machlon died? Who was the miabim? Chilyon. All the property of Machlon and all the duty to do yibum passed not to some strange relative, but to Chilyon. So, in fact, it was Chilyon who Boaz is really miabim from. You know, that's not the right grammar, but you get the message. It's Chilyon who stood in Machlon's shoes. And now Boaz is going to be zeicha to the property, not of Machlon, but to the property of Machlon through Chilyon. And that's why here he says Chilyon first and Machlon after.
Although we really don't have any indication as to when, what the time sequence was, how long was Chilyon survived Machlon?
By a minute or by a year, right? We don't. But at least we can say the pasuk says Vayamusu gam shnehem machlon v'chilyon. Machlon died first. So he's adding this thought that, in fact, it's Chilyon that he's taking over for, and that's why it says Chilyon first. Vayomru kol ha'am asher bashar vazikenim edim. We're edim, and we're going to give you a bracha. You're married. We broke the glass, mazel tov, you're married. Yitein Hashem es ha'isha haba'a el beisecha kirachel uchaleah asher banu shdehem es beis Yisroel. These people, Boaz and the people who lived there, are from what Shevet?
Yehuda.
And Yehuda was the child of Leah, not Rachel. Why, therefore, are these people praising and blessing and giving all kinds of exciting news to this new couple and tying them to Rachel and Leah? You would think they would be rooting for, if you excuse the expression, the home team, and they would say Leah and Rachel. Why are they saying Rachel and Leah? And then further, it says, Asher banu shtehem es beis Yisrael, both of whom were responsible for building the house of Israel. Why would they say Rachel first? Good.
She gave it up for peace and for...
Okay, so, very good. Gemara tells us that Yaakov was suspicious, and for good reason, that Lavan would try some kind of trick. So he gave what we would call today a password, a code, it says in the Gemara Simanim, something to Rachel, and says, listen, on the wedding night, no artificial light, I'm not going to know who you are. You're not going to know who I am. I'm what's the only man, so you don't know who I am. I want to make sure it's you. So say whatever. What was the pastor when the duck used to come down? I forget. With Groucho Marx, he had a password. Some kind of crazy, the Havdil. Some kind of password. So he gave a password. He gave the password to Rachel. Rachel was concerned that Leah would be embarrassed, that Leah would be shamed. So Leah received from Rachel a password. So comes the night, who are you? Say the magic word. He says, she says the magic word. Now he knows, or at least he thinks, it's Rachel, and he consummates the marriage. Were it not for Rachel doing that, Leah would never have married Yaakov. Because had she not done that, he would have said, wait a minute, this is a fraud, it's not her, I'm marrying Rachel, get out of here. So even Yehuda, which comes from Leah, has to thank Rachel for enabling the marriage between Leah and Yaakov. Asher banu shtehem, together, they built Beis Yisrael. V'asechayel be'afrosa, Ukrosh Shem Beis Lachem, and everything should be wonderful and successful for you. I'll leave you with one thought for tomorrow. Asher Banu Shtehem Es Beis Yisrael. We're going to give a blessing to this couple that they should have children and everything should be beautiful, and it should be like Rachel and Leah, it doesn't matter now what order, Rachel and Leah vis-a-vis Yaakov. Isn't there a little problem here? Why would we be saying to someone, let it be like Rachel and Leah and Yaakov? Yaakov is forever under discussion for having married two sisters. Why then in the bracha that you give to a new couple? Now you'll be going to bless your children, you bless your daughter. She should be like Rachel, she should be Leah, fine. But now, in a marital situation here, why are we saying your marriage should be like, this woman should be like, everything should be like Rachel and Leah, who helped build Yaakov's house. Yaakov married two sisters, and one of them is not even buried in Mars and Machpelah because of that. So there's an interesting question about why that bracha. And then finally, in the next pasuk, which we'll take up right with this issue tomorrow, the next pasuk talks about Yehuda and Tamar, which is also not one of Yehuda's more admirable achievements in his life, at least superficially, having had a child with his daughter-in-law. Okay, so we'll pick those up tomorrow.
Stay hand as the master.